So this morning, we're going to talk about attitude. How is your attitude and how are you living? So I wrote down a couple things here as we get started, just as a kind of a primer. Our attitude plays on the most significant roles in every aspect of our life. Everything follows our attitude. Our attitude is either working for us or it is working against us. And we determine which is going to take precedence every day. In fact, we have certain skills, education, talents, and abilities, but what drives us around every day is the attitude that we choose. If our attitude isn't working right, then nothing will be right. This is the part where at least half of you will sit back and think to yourself, there's nothing wrong with my attitude. Why is he talking about my attitude? Did you ever consider that professional sports teams spend tons and tons and tons of money on those motivational speakers that come into the locker room right before the big game? These are the most talented athletes in the world. People that have been working their entire careers to perfect a game and a craft. Yet it all comes down to their attitude. The team that wins the championship every year, whether it's the Steelers or the Penguins, maybe someday the Pirates again, it all comes down to the attitude and how they go into that game. Almost every professional athlete has gone through the same training, the same background, the same experiences. But what separates them is their attitude. Many of us know people that have cancer. And one of the first things that many oncologists will tell a patient is that your quality of life will not be dependent upon the treatment that we give you. It'll be your attitude. As we approach the most difficult situations in life, it's not the circumstances that will affect the outcome. It's our attitude. So I want to throw up a couple quotes. A positive attitude gives you power over your circumstances instead of your circumstances having power over you. Joyce Meyer, for those of you who are a fan, that's her quote. Next one. Life is 10% what happens to me and 90% of how I react to it. The primary cause of unhappiness is never the situation, but your thoughts about it. And the last one, drama does not just walk into your life. Either you create it, invite it, or associate with it. That's a tough one. So there's many types of quotes that really create some perspective on how valuable and how important our attitude is. But the one that probably stands out to me the most is that nobody can choose your attitude but you. It is completely our decision. You know, I remember a while ago we had a guest speaker, Reese Saunders, come in and do some training with us on healing and prophecy and different things like that. And he talked a lot about us as beings. Right? We're made up of three parts. Body, soul, and spirit. So our spirit man is something that we focused on a fairly regular basis. It's something we exercise whenever we read our Bible, when we pray, when we pursue our faith journey. Our body is something whether we use and abuse or we keep healthy. We either exercise or we don't. We either eat McDonald's or we eat organic paleo. Right? I still like McDonald's every once in a while. But our soul is something that we don't often think about. It's not something we often discuss. And our soul is, at times, just as powerful as our spirit. And I remember Reese, through his teaching, he was saying that our spirit man really needs to keep our soul in line. Because we can allow our soul to have just as much impact on the decisions we make and the choices that we make and the directions that we go is our spirit if we don't allow our spirit man to control our soul. But our soul is where those emotions live. It's what has our attitude. It's what makes us react to situations. It's like whenever you go to the fast food restaurant. Anybody seen the bullying video on Facebook? So there's this video that's been going around on Facebook that's set in a Burger King. And it has a couple young kids, and they're picking on one of the kids, and they're messing with them, and all these people are sitting around in the restaurant, and nobody says anything. Nobody sticks up for this kid. So then the same group of people, when they serve their food, the guy in the back making their hamburger smashes their burger or tears it in half or takes their french fries and clumps them all up and then throws them into the container. And every single one of those people came right back up to the counter and said, "What did you do to my food?" And of course, playing along, the guy said, "I bullied it. I picked on it. I smashed it." And the point of the video is to make the connection between what our words and our actions do to individuals through bullying. And it was designed for students and to show them. But we react so strongly at times to things that are so insignificant, right? We'll jump up in a second to go up and complain about our hamburger because the bun's smashed or it's torn. But we may just sit by and watch as a young kid is being bullied in a restaurant. So the couple examples I want to give you from the Bible on groups of people that could possibly have the worst attitude. And we're going to start in Exodus. Exodus chapter 14, verse 10. "Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." So who is this? The Israelites, right? So here they are. They have been rescued from the hand of the Egyptians, from being slaves. Moses has led them out of that place, and they are headed towards the promised land. And things got a little rocky, right? For about 40 years. But it got a little rocky. And they're saying to Moses, why did you take us away from, at least there, we knew what to expect. We were slaves, and now we're going to die in the desert. Why would you do that to us? Next one, Exodus 16. 16 verse 3, "The Israelites said to them, 'If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into the desert to starve this entire assembly to death.'" He took them out of slavery. Exodus 17. "The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, 'Give us water to drink.' Moses replied, 'Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?'" They're complaining about water, complaining about food, complaining of why they had to be taken out into the desert where it's hot. Can you imagine this going on for 40 years? No wonder Moses wanted to quit. No matter what, they always had something to complain about. But the Lord continued to take them around the desert over and over and over and over again for 40 years until their attitude was adjusted and they were positioned and prepared and in a place in their hearts to receive the promised land. That's the whole point of Exodus, right? So I got a little activity for you. We got a couple today, actually. I want you to extend your hand out in front of you like this and put your hand right over top of me. Every one of you are looking at the back of your hand right now, either thinking you need to wash them or you need to trim your nails. My cuticles might need done. But if your hand's extended and you're blocking me, imagine that I'm the difficult situation. And the back of your hand is your really bad attitude. What are you most focused on right now? The really bad attitude. Now let's switch it. I'm still the really difficult situation. And the back of your hand is a really good attitude. What are you most focused on? Your good attitude. You see, the difficult situation is secondary. It's further away. It's somewhat out of perspective. What is always first in our focus is our attitude. Whether we realize it or not, everything that we react to, everything we do, everything we say is through first that perspective and that filter of our attitude. The situation, the circumstance, the difficulty, the pain, the sickness, the struggle is way ahead of us. But in order to deal with it, we have to get through our attitude first. Mark chapter 5, verse 18 through 25. One of my favorite stories in the Bible. Mark chapter 5, verse 18. That looks like Mark 2. Did I have the wrong one? Go ahead, put up Mark 2. That's my second favorite story. Go ahead, put that one up. I think you're right. I think I'm wrong. A few days later, when Jesus again entered Capernaum, there were people that heard he had come home. So many gathered. Many gathered there. There was no room left, not even outside the door. And he preached the word to them. Some men came, bringing to him a paralytic carried by four of them. Since they could not get to Jesus because of the crowd, they made an opening in the roof above Jesus. And after digging through the roof, lowered the mat down the paralyzed man was lying on. So I'm going to stop there. For those of you who have heard me tell this story, I like to refer to the paralytic as Paralytic Pete. Nothing against Father Pete. I used to teach this a long time before I ever knew Pete. But Paralytic Pete is a guy that has a great attitude. The man is paralyzed. In those days, if you were paralyzed, you were a beggar. You depended on other people. You couldn't provide for yourself. But he is so determined that he's going to be healed, and despite the situation that he's in, maintains an attitude of promise. That he gets four of his buddies together, and he says, "Hey, I hear that Jesus is at that house up the street. I want you to put me on a mat and carry me up there." Can you imagine that? He gets those guys together. They start hiking Paralytic Pete up the road. They get closer to the house, and as they get closer and they approach the house, they see this huge crowd of people around the house. There's so many people that they can't even get close. They can't even get a glimpse of Jesus. But Paralytic Pete's determined. He's not going to be deterred by the crowds of people in the situation in front of him because his attitude is positive. So he says, "You know what? Why don't you guys hoist me up onto the roof?" Now, can you imagine having a paralyzed friend that you've carried on a mat, and now you're going to toss him up onto a roof? Somewhere along the line, you think, this is not a good plan. This is not going to end well, right? So they get up on the roof, and if you can imagine, it was probably some type of straw structure or something to that effect, because it says that they start digging through the roof material. Now think of Jesus' perspective for a minute. Obviously, he knew what was going on. He knew it was coming. But he's in there ministering to people, praying for people, healing people. And all of a sudden, roof material starts falling down into the house. He's probably thinking, "Man, I got all these people in here. I've got a crowd outside. There's a line of people. And now I got people coming through the ceiling." And it's interesting to me that the way that it was translated into English, it says that Paralytic Pete was lowered from the ceiling down into the house. Maybe it's just me. But I kind of imagine it a little more like Paralytic Pete and his buddies are up on the roof and they're tearing stuff apart and branches are flying and straws flying and things are going everywhere. And all of a sudden it just gives way and Paralytic Pete goes, boom! And there's Jesus, right? Talk about getting to the front of the line. But he was so determined. He had such a positive attitude that he was going to be healed. That he was not going to allow anything to stand in his way. And the story goes on that, of course, Jesus prays for him. He says, "Because of your faith, you will be healed." Not because of Jesus laying hands on him, not because of his anointing, but Jesus looks at the man and says, "Because of your faith, you will be healed." I think that speaks volumes to the power that our attitude can have within our faith. Joshua 1, another interesting story. So we've come through Exodus, right? Moses is getting ready to transition to the mantle of leadership to Joshua. After the death of Moses, the servants of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I am about to give them to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the great sea on the west. No one will be able to stand up against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. You do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go." He tells him to be strong and courageous three different times. He's encouraging him through that passage. Because God knows that for the past 40 years, Moses has dealt with whining Israelites that had to have a major attitude adjustment before they were ready to go into the promised land. And Joshua is now picking up that mantle of leadership and taking over and leading the people into the promised land. And God is saying to him, I know that it's not going to be easy, that it's going to be difficult, but you're going to need to be strong and courageous and have a positive attitude to continue to lead these people forward. Because it's so easy to go back to where we were. It's so easy to go back to, it's so hot and dry in the desert and we don't have water. And at least when we were slaves, we knew we were getting fed. For some, the best attitude adjustment is humor. So I've got to share a story. I think I was a senior in high school. I may have been transitioning between high school and my freshman year of college. But it was springtime, and myself and my good friend Mike and my other buddy Dennis were up at Seven Springs for a dance competition. So I thought I'd just share some of my moves with you this morning. We were not dancing. We were, however, helping out with the sound system for the dance competition. So during one of the afternoons off, Mike had just got a brand new pickup truck. It was a brand new Chevy S10 with the big bulky BF Goodrich tires. We thought it would be a good idea, amongst the melting snow and mud, to explore Seven Springs a little bit. So, of course, that turned into an afternoon of off-roading and seeing if we could get stuck and see how many mountains we could climb and muddy pits we could go through. And Mike's brand-new truck began to get beat a little bit. We were young and stupid and doing things that I would completely knock my kids out if they ever do. Anybody ever been to Seven Springs? Been on North Face? It's a little bit of a steep hill. So we decided to drive down North Face in the truck. And most of the snow had melted, so there was dirt, but it's a mountain and it's steep. And as we were driving down North Face, Mike's in the driver's seat, I'm in the passenger seat, Dennis is in a truck behind us. As we're going down North Face, we begin to slide and lose control. And just as we get to that point where you're thinking, wow, I have no control anymore, the front right tire hits a ditch, and the back end of the truck goes flying up over top of the front end of the truck, and we begin to tumble down North Face. We land upside down in the truck. Fortunately, we had on our seatbelts, and I remember hanging upside down by the seatbelt, looking over at Mike and saying, my mom's not going to let me hang out with you anymore. Neither one of us were injured until we took off our seatbelts and fell and hit our heads and had to crawl through the glass to get out of the vehicle. It was a situation that was dangerous. He totaled his vehicle. Both of us could have very easily been critically injured, but by the grace of God, we weren't. And a little bit of humor is the biggest thing that stands out in the story 20 years later. We laugh about it now. You know, it could have been one of those situations that Mike at the time was a brand new apprentice in the profession that he was pursuing. It was his brand new truck. He could have been, woe is me. I lost my brand new truck. I almost killed my friend. We could have both ended up in the hospital. But a little bit of humor adjusted our attitude of the situation. The weekend got better because we continued to run the sound for the dance competition, and there was an evening that we needed to be somewhat dressed up to go to the event. The clothes that we happened to be wearing that day were the same clothes we were supposed to wear to the event. I remember they were like, I had like on a khaki pair of pants, and we ended up soaking our clothes in the bathtub in the hotel room to get the blood out of them. So we go to the event, and word had obviously spread. Seven Springs has its own public safety department. And we came back to the lodge, the public safety officer, his number one concern was, did you hit any of the sprinkler or the snowmaking equipment? Because the plumbing runs up to the lakes at the top, and if you break one of those pipes, it's a free flow of water, and it's really hard to fix. But anyway, we go to this fancy dinner, and everybody from the conference is there, the competition's there, and the gentleman that we were working with the sound equipment said, hey, I ordered you guys dessert. Okay. So the waiter comes over, and he goes, who had the pineapple upside-down cake? Nice. Thank you. So it's the joy of the Lord that gives us our strength, right? I couldn't control that Mike was going to flip his truck over, but I could control how we dealt with the situation and how we remembered it. As I said, you know, 20 years later, we still remember the humor in it more so than the trauma. Similarly, in my day job, I have the opportunity almost every day to see people at their very worst, right? When somebody calls 911, it typically isn't because it's a good day. You know, either something medically is going on or they've suffered some type of traumatic injury. And I found that one of the most rewarding things that I can do is have excellent bedside manner, right? There's nothing worse than you go into the doctor's office and the doctor's standing there with his clipboard. All right, what's the problem? All right, checks your vital signs. All right, here's your script. Have a nice day. I like to kneel down in front of the patient. Hi, my name's Jesse. What's going on today? I have this crushing chest pain, right? The approach is the thing that makes the biggest difference in a healthcare provider to either be a really good healthcare provider in your mind or a really bad healthcare provider. Whenever we're running cardiac arrests and we're doing CPR and giving medications and doing medical math in our head and all these different crazy things that go on at the same time, do you think the patient really cares if I know how to do medical math? Do you think he really cares if I know that I have to charge my monitor to 360 joules to get his heart restarted and with his ventricular fibrillation? They could care less, right? They could care less that I read some article that there's a new study that says you should give this medication for certain arrhythmias. But whenever I walk over to the wife and I say, I understand this is a really difficult situation, but I want you to know that we're doing the absolute best that we can for your husband right now, it completely changes perspective. Because of the attitude. We can't control the situations that we get ourselves into, but we can certainly control how we react to them. Another interesting story, about 10 years ago, I had a patient that, he was 7 years old at the time. He was playing ball in the backyard with his younger brother, and they were playing football. And there was a wooded area right along the edge of their yard, and he was running back for the football, and his right leg went into a tree branch. And the tree branch was the perfect height, shaped in the perfect way, that it speared directly through his leg. So we get there, and he's stuck, right? There's this huge tree with this branch sticking out, and this kid with his leg impaled through the tree branch. Don't worry, we're serving lunch soon. So we were able to cut the tree branch and leave the branch in position and get everything immobilized and get him out to the ambulance. And we had given him a tremendous amount of pain medicine. Really, the most we could have given him for his age. There really wasn't much else we could do to help him with his pain. And he was continually screaming in pain. So we had just put iPads on the ambulances. So I grabbed the iPads and I said, hey, do you like Angry Birds? And he looks at me. He goes, yeah. Then Angry Birds was brand new. It was a cool game, right? He took the iPad, and it was laser-focused on Angry Birds the whole rest of the way to the hospital. And every 5 minutes or so, when I asked him, hey, how's your pain doing, buddy? What? Because he was so busy playing Angry Birds. So in medicine, there's this fancy distraction technique that you can do for things like that. But it was because of attitude that changed. Right? If he was so focused on the injury and the situation and how upset he was, the pain continued to get worse and worse and worse and worse. But as soon as he shifted his perspective onto something else, something positive, something he enjoyed, he was no longer in pain. So we're coming to the time of year where we talk about gratitude. Attitude and gratitude. They have to go together because they rhyme, and that just makes a good sermon, right? But you would be shocked at how much attitude has the ability to affect a sermon. And I know Pastor Ken at times talks about how much he appreciates the gratitude of somebody whenever they compliment his sermon afterwards. But oftentimes we just get into a routine of appreciating what he does. And we don't always take the time to thank him. I think I need a chair. So whenever you are participating in church, you have just as much impact on how the sermon goes as the person speaking does. And we have a lot of different types of people that sit in church. We have the slumpers, right? We have the lovey-dovey leaners. We have the head bobbers. And probably my personal favorite, and this usually impacts the teenagers the most, is the super spiritual prayers that go through the entire service. Just praying and interceding with their eyes closed and their head bowed. Praying that every aspect of the sermon will just go perfectly. Right? It was really good when we were in the old church and we had pews, because you could just lean right up there on the pew in front of you and you looked really spiritual, but you could take a nap. But if you sit tall in your chair and you remain engaged and you feed back and you interact, a sermon can be much more positive and have much more effect than when you have your slumpers and your leaners and your interceders. It reminds me of coaching baseball. And I had a talk with the coaches that I work with over this past summer. There's a tendency for dad coaches to like to give their sons real-time feedback and critique while they're batting, right? So Logan's up to bat, and you got the third base coach screaming, "Keep your head on the ball," right? And you got the first base coach screaming, "Watch the pitch." And you have all these different things that are coming in and being screamed at the, and parents are yelling from the background, "Hit a home run," right? And I sat down with my coaches after one of the games and I said, "You know, there is not a single thing that you're going to say to a batter when they're up there that they're going to hear or be able to adjust in the time that they need to in order to make the change to hit better. So maybe we should just be quiet. You know, let's encourage them. Let's clap for them. But let's not get so wrapped up in giving them specific critique while they're trying to bat. Get your back back, get your elbow up." All these things that we like to say as coaches because it makes us sound like we know what we're talking about whenever somebody's trying to bat. So back to gratitude. It's certainly that time of year as we approach Thanksgiving that we begin to think of things that we're thankful for. So I have a little quiz for you, a little trivia that we'll throw up on the screen. Cue the quiz. And the question is this: when was the first Thanksgiving? Your options are A, 1621, B, 1863, or C, 444 BC. How many people think it's A? Well, we got a good number. B? A few. C. Oh, looks like the A's win. So here's the answer. 1621 was a celebratory meal that was held by who? Right. So it seems to be the thing that we always go back to as the first Thanksgiving. However, that actual day was never really repeated for a very long time. And it wasn't until 1863... that in the middle of the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln proclaimed the first national day of Thanksgiving. So where does 444 BC come from? Do you have Nehemiah 8:10 ready to go? Let's throw that up there. So since Pastor Ken's been in Nehemiah, you'll appreciate this. Nehemiah said in Nehemiah 8:10, "Go and enjoy choice food and sweet drinks and send some to those who have nothing prepared." That sounds an awful lot like Thanksgiving to me. I think the first Thanksgiving was in 444 BC. Psalm 136 says, "Give thanks to the Lord because his love endures forever. We're commanded to give thanks to the Lord, to have gratitude for each other. It changes our attitude. Attitude is absolutely everything. Again, how are you living? It is everything in how we walk with the Lord, how we treat our family, how we parent our kids, how we react to situations, and how we deal with the challenges that come up in our journey of faith. So, Father, I thank you today that you've brought us into this place. Lord, I thank you that you will give us things, Lord, to think about, to consider, to ponder, ways that we can adjust our attitude and evaluate the way that we're living. God, I pray as we go forth from this place that you would bless each and every one. Lord, that you would allow us to focus more on our gratitude as we come into Thanksgiving. We thank you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Have a great week.